This is part two of my conversation with Amethysta Herrick on sex and gender and transitioning. Part one is above or below or beside this episode, and I do recommend you listen to it first. It's important that you get the science part under your belt. Ami is a fabulous storyteller, and in this part of our conversation, Ami is so very honest about her personal transitioning experience. It's both intriguing and, at times, heartbreaking. As parents and grandparents, we really do have the power to screw up our kids for life. We need to know how to be better and do better. In defense of everyone out there, Ami says, as humans, we know who we are. My thought is that we humans need to remember that another person's knowing is as valid and straightforward as our own is. Listen now. Okay. You've been talking about your transition. Are you comfortable talking about your transition?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. If I don't, nobody knows. And how are you supposed to see if I'm normal or not if I don't explain what my experience is? Some of this has been embarrassing, but let's do it.
We're doing it. That was the question.
Okay. Good. Oh, just
the
talk
microphone
about it?
Is yours. Oh. Yeah, if is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
You went to Thailand. I know that much.
I did. Yes. Well, so there are several aspects of gender transition. First of all, two. Sorry, I guess several is maybe pushing it, but there are two major aspects of gender transition. One is what we call social transition, and so that is you have to change your name, you change identity documents. I just recently finished changing my Qdoba, you know, fast food restaurant loyalty program. I was really stunned it took that long, but it did. Just let it go. But those are aspects of a social transition.
So is that like the markers on your driver's license, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, things like that. So usually name and gender marker are the big major ones. You know, so I changed my name. So I started transition. It was July 7th, 2022. By November 7th. Oh, actually, yeah, it was the 7th even. November 7th, I filed for a name change. It's Amethysta Selena Herrick. And a gender marker change. But I did, there were things I had to do. Like I had to get fingerprinted. I had to be investigated by the FBI and by the Colorado Bureau of Investigation.
Is that just to be sure that you're not this weird criminal who's changing their gender to go unnoticed?
Yes. Well, it's common for any name change. Okay. Except for marriage, except for like obvious insurance, not insurance, but obvious like changes like getting married or getting divorced. Like they don't investigate that much. But if you go, I want to go from, you know, Reginald whatever to Elton John. Shoot, he's in Britain, so that's a crap example. But they check you out. They go, well, why are you changing your name? Are you dodging, you know, palimony? What are you dodging? Alimony and what's the anyway? Are you dodging something? Are you a felon? So that's why I had to get checked out for that. So I got my name changed and my gender marker changed, but then I had to change my social security number and then, social security record. And when I had that other stuff, I changed my birth certificate in California. Those were the major things. And then I went around to everybody I knew and I said, can you update your contacts? You should update your contact. So that's a lot of it. Social transition also generally means like figuring out how you want to look. So as I was growing up, I had to find clothes that made my body look not absolutely horrible, right? I mean, everybody does this, right? When you're growing up, you're trying, and I mean, I still, just today, I was messing around with different makeup because I'm like, ooh, I have some time. Let me play around with what would happen here, you know? And I look identical, but I keep trying different things in my makeup box because I'm like, well, I got it. Let's play with it. This period of experimentation, usually we do it when we're kids. You know, we're like 10 to 12 years old or something. And people don't care. Like people look at 12-year-olds. You see a 12-year-old girl with poorly applied eyeliner, you go, well, it's just not bad. I mean, she's 12, right? I mean, could be worse. When you're doing that at 52, now for what it's worth, I had a lot of experience putting on makeup, so it wasn't hard to remember all that from years ago. But when you're experimenting at 52, people look at you much more critically. And so social transition generally is also changing your appearance in some way so that you do start to conform to the expectations you want to conform to fulfill. So that is helped by medical transition, which is usually much more subtle and slow. So hormone therapy is a big one. I started taking estradiol patches initially, and then estradiol valerate oil that I inject, and progesterone pills. Then I take the pills every night. I do the injections twice a week. What that did, though, was tell my body, stop making testosterone. And like I said, my body responded really quickly. It went, that's fine. We didn't like it anyway. It was because it's kind of a crap hormone. We don't need that anyway. So my body shut down androgen production, particularly testosterone production. And if you want more graphic details there, that actually meant that, like, the two berries there, the two berries in a bag, the cantaloupes in a sack, shrank really quickly. Like, they went away. They went away. My body just started reabsorbing them. They're like, we're not using these. We'll go ahead and let them go, which was fine. I was okay with that. So that's a large aspect, generally, hormone replacement therapy. But then you have surgery. And so this is obviously a much bigger, that's a big topic. There are a lot of surgeries you could get, facial masculinization, facial feminization, because now I'm talking just in general transition, but you could get facial surgeries. You could get, I have seen surgeries where they break bones, to like leg bones, to make you taller. I'm fine with that. I mean, go do it. You know, if you love it, do it. I ended up, I did respond well to estrogen, so I was growing breast tissue. I did get, you know, full breast bud development, and I'm actually still growing to a little bit. It lasts 3 to 5 years, like any puberty, right? I mean, this is, I'm essentially, my body's going through another puberty, just 40 years too late, I guess. So I did grow breasts. I got up to a B cup on my own, which is atypical. Again, you know, your mileage may vary, as they say. But I went to Thailand and I got breast augmentation. It's not much. Really, I just wanted to fill in on the inside there. Nobody can see this because it's not video, but I wanted to fill in the inside because most of the breast tissue I had was on the outside of a bra cup. So I wanted to be able to get some cleavage more easily. So I got some breast augmentation. And then I also got a minimal depth vaginoplasty. And so that is a reconstructive surgical technique where they took my existing parts and turned them into something that looks like a vagina. I did not get a canal. You can get an actual neovaginal canal. I chose not to do that because I'm married to a woman and I'm married and I'm 54. Like, how many more sex partners am I going to get? You know, it's likely the number is low. So I was like, I won't bother getting a canal. Do you want to know why I went to Thailand? Do you want to hear that story? Because it's a bit anger-inducing, but
we're on video. You can't throw anything at me, so
right.
If you get angry.
Well, so here's the thing. So I have paid for every aspect of my gender-affirming care, every little bit. My because I'm in Colorado, I was able to get hormone replacement therapy. Just by what's called informed consent. So I went to a clinic and they said, we're going to inform you that there are side effects, including feminization. Do you consent? And I'm like, hell yes. What? Yes. I mean, it is kind of ironic, right? You know, one of the things that I've seen, conservatives are like, hey, this could be permanent. And I'm like, I hope so. Oh my gosh. What? These feelings of happiness, of gender euphoria, they might be permanent. Good. Good. Thank you. I'm glad. That's supposed to be a deterrent. Oof. Anyway, I have paid for it for every bit of my gender affirming care because I went to a clinic where I was given a diagnosis that my insurance didn't honor completely. And when I looked at surgery, they said, well, we will cover surgery. So I was intending to go to a clinic in Ohio, in beautiful downtown Columbus, Ohio. And my insurance denied the claim. And I went back to them. I said, why'd you deny this claim? And they said, because there's somebody down the road from you. I'm from California. I grew up in LA. So down the road is like, you know, it could be 100 miles, right? And if you're not, you know, if you're not using Freedom units, that's like 160 kilometers. Okay. So there's a place like an hour south of me that could do it. And I had reached out to them. And when I originally called them, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to get a consultation for a vaginoplasty. They said, okay, we'll put you on a waiting list. We'll get back to you. And I called them about a week later. And yeah, I'm on a waiting list. You know, is somebody going to call me back? And they go, no. That's a waiting list for the consultation. We'll get, you know, you'll, when there's enough time, they will call you and then you can come down and get a consultation. And I said, no. That's the surgery, right? And they go, nope. And I go, well, how long is this going to take? They go, year and a half. And I went, wait a minute. If it's going to take a year and a half to get a consultation, how long would it take to get the surgery? And they said it could be anywhere from 2 years to 5 years after that. So I was looking, if I went down the road, 50 miles, if I went down the road, I was going to wait 3 to 7 years before I could get surgery.
Is that because the demand is so high, or is it because they just... they got so many things on their roster that they just fit you in.
I don't want to speak ill of these people. This is a reconstructive surgery clinic, is what it is. So they do, you know, if you've had an accident, if you've had a mastectomy, you know, they do all the reconstructive surgical procedures. Transgender care was not at the top of their list. And I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's because insurance is funky for transgender surgeries, I don't know. But all of their gender affirming surgery was on a wait list. Everything else was, you know, come on down and we'll get you breast augmentation so long as you're cisgender. So I don't know. I mean, I wish I could answer the question. There are many surgeons in the US who are like, I was going to say boutique. I guess that makes sense. Like boutique reconstructive surgery surgeons who specialize just in gender affirming surgeries. And that was where I was going to go in Ohio, because when I talked to the people in Denver, they were like, might take 7 years. And I said, that's too long. So when I asked the insurance company, I said, so why'd you deny this? They said, there's somebody down the road. And I said, but it could take 7 years. And they said, that's fine. Because this is not a life-threatening situation. Which, you know, most reconstructive surgery is not. So I found that kind of interesting.
Well,
go ahead.
It's not life-threatening to the person who said, maybe that car can hit me today. So life-threatening is all in the definition, apparently.
It is. And there was a study conducted by, I believe it was UCLA. It's not even, I believe. It's UCLA, although I'm trying to remember the name of the organization within University of California at Los Angeles. Anybody who's not from LA, sorry. Just like using Freedom units, I should probably define my acronyms, right?
That's okay.
So at UCLA, they conducted a study of, in short, suicidal ideation in particular in the transgender community. And I want to say there are 12,000 respondents, I think, in this study. So it's a significant sample size. You know, it's not small. And they found that in the transgender community, about 82% of the community either strongly consider suicide as a solution or attempts it. I was in both categories. I mean, I've attempted suicide several times because because life sucks when you know, when you can't be who you are. Obviously, it didn't take. I mean, I'm still here talking to you, and that's good, because I didn't recognize that life could be happy until last couple of years. So it's an interesting point to make. It's not a life-threatening situation when 82% of the transgender community strongly considers suicide as a solution to chronic gender dysphoria. So it's a good point. I don't have an answer for that, other than to say that apparently there are other pathologies that my insurance company thought were more important. So here I am.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Just because you were researching, 50 miles south, Colorado, all that.
Right.
Well, no, seriously, because I had to do this myself, or I did ask this question myself about something, is if you have to wait 7 years, how many of these surgeries does this surgeon actually do? Like,
It's a good question.
Because
I don't know. I actually have a friend, a personal friend, who went to this surgeon for a vaginoplasty, and she is very, very pleased with the results.
Okay.
I'll say that. So I don't know if he does many. I think there are two people in that clinic. I don't know if they do many. I don't know the quality of their work because I didn't ask.
Yeah.
For like a demonstration from my friend. Can I? Instead, what I did, so for what it's worth, and I'll admit this to you, when I got that email that said, no, we've denied all of your claim, I lay down on the floor and I screamed as silently as I could, just kill me now, universe. I mean, why would you do this? Why would you get me to this point only to steal this away from me? I thought, fuck it all. Hopefully I can say that. Mm-hmm. I thought, forget it. There's no reason I should be here. I'd gone through more than a year of hormone replacement therapy. I was feeling better. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to get stolen away from me. Forget it. I'm out of here. And I don't know if anybody's spiritual out there. Maybe somebody is, but I heard a voice, more or less, say, just wait. And I said, no, I'm not going to wait. This is ridiculous. I'm out of here. I'm shuffling off this mortal coil. And the universe said, no, just wait. And I picked myself up and I went, God, does anybody else do surgeries? I mean, what the? And then I remembered somebody, I had a psychologist tell me, if you ever need surgery, go to Thailand. And I remember at the time, I was like, I'm not going to go to some weird third world country where I'm not sure I'm going to get back. Right? Like, that's ridiculous. You're a fool. I'm not going to do that. But I looked them up. And it is a huge industry in Thailand. Thailand in particular. Because Thailand has a community called Khatoy. Presumably you smiled, so maybe you saw this. They have a whole culture. It translates loosely as ladyboy. And so it's a culture of transgender women. Not much transgender men, but that is the that is a whole culture. I actually found the word Khatoy can, its first appearance in literature. Are you ready for this? Its first appearance in literature was 1296. It was 800 years ago. I mean, almost 750 years ago. Not long after the Thai language was formalized in 1280 something or another. 1280, you know, something. I'm sorry, Thai people, if I got the number wrong there. But so it's just within 10 years, they were writing about Khatoy culture, and it's been 750 years. So once again, I want to bring up, have we talked about this for a while? Well, yes. 700 years at least. Although we could talk about other stories if you're interested. So I ended up looking at Thai surgeons, and they were ecstatic to talk to me. They were so happy. And I started talking to them in April, and I got surgery in July. So months, you know, 3-4 months. I don't remember exactly when I made the appointment. And I actually pushed it out a little bit because, why did I push it out? I don't know.
Suddenly faced with the reality?
Maybe. I mean, but they were like, we could get you in June. Well, oh, I know, because my son, I wanted to make sure my son was out for the summer from school. And I think they were like, yeah, we could do, I mean, I think they were talking 6, 8 weeks. Oh, I also had to get a passport. That was the thing. I'd had a passport, but I had to get a renewed. And a passport renewal when you're changing name and gender marker is a bigger, ball of yarn than you might think. So, but I went there and I had the most amazing experience. If I were to go to Denver, I would have stayed in the hospital one night, just one night. In Thailand, I stayed the night before the surgery so that they could make sure that I was prepared. And I guess not anxious, maybe, because they didn't want a mental disorder in the surgery, in the operating room. So I was there the night before, and I was there for another 8 nights before they released me. I had amazing care, and this was great too. When I showed up, when we got there, I noticed that everybody is like color coordinated by function. So like the administrative people were in sort of this powder blue, sort of ornate looking skirt suit, which was cute. The interpreters, like the what do they call them? I think they called them like international relations. There we go. They had sort of a white blouse, same sort of powder blue skirt. That was a cute little outfit too. All of the nurses, especially on my floor, and maybe it's all of them, had these lavender skirt suits. Somebody walked in and I'm like, oh my gosh, did they put this on just because it's me? Or was it, No, every nurse was wearing lavender. So it was an amazing experience. So absolutely amazing. And when I was in Thailand, people they just treated me like a woman. They're like, why would you be any different? Right? Every nurse like knew I had had a vaginoplasty, right? They were nursing me nursing me after a vaginoplasty, knew very dang well what I had had done. And I was just 100% she, miss. It was the most amazing experience of my life. And I will tell you, when I got back to the United States, I actually, do I have it here? It's right there. I don't want to grab it because I'll bump the microphone. But I have a USB, like a flash drive. The surgeon was taking, so we were there for a month. And so the surgeon took at least 4 sets of photographs directly after surgery up till we left 30 days later. And he goes, hang on, I'll get you a flash drive with all the photos. And I was like, ooh, I really don't want to see that. Thank you. I don't want to see pictures of this, But they gave me the flash drive. And I actually didn't open it up until somebody asked me, said, can I see the results? And I was like, yeah, if we do, like, I'm not going to send you photos though. Like, get on, somewhere where I can share screens, I'll show it to you. The point I'm going to go at is that I looked at those photographs and I went, oh gosh, that's really good work. Just from a surgical standpoint, I was like, wow, like that's really, because I don't know if you've ever noticed, it's hard to see like that area. Maybe somebody out there can confirm, hard to see right there between your legs. So then I started looking at US results. And I'm not gonna say that they're horrible. I healed up so much more quickly, and I think my results are so much more natural looking. Now I'm fortunate. I was lucky that I went to Thailand. And in Thailand, they experiment with a lot of different techniques. Mine was called, the surgeon who did mine did an incredible job. When I was doing all of this, by the way, while I was in Thailand, I don't know if you ever found this in my on my YouTube page, but I did a daily video from, I think, April 24th, April 23rd, something like that, end of April to when we got back, first week of August. 100 videos or something like that, 100 days, it was a lot of them. But I wanted to persist what it takes to go to Thailand, what it's like just before the surgery, what it's like to get the surgery. I mean, I was taking videos the day after. I mean, I look a mess. Like 3 or 4 days, I look a mess before I could get up and take a shower and everything. Oh, that must have been a week. Well, anyway, point is that I had made a lot of videos because I wanted to persist this process, if not for me, then somebody else who comes afterwards. But I talked about the surgery and I talked about my experience, and the hospital where I got that done reached out to me and said, you would be a great liaison, international liaison. Will you represent us to the English-speaking world? And I'm like, yeah. So I'm now actually authorized to discuss surgical options with English-speaking people for Yonhee International Hospital in Bangkok, Thailand. It was the most amazing experience. So amazing.
One thing I will add in here, too, is I interviewed, I think, at the tail end of last year, a woman who, because of familial cancer, opted for a double mastectomy.
Oh, sure.
Now, as common as mastectomies are in North America, she asked her surgeon if could he show her, I think it was a him, could the doctor show her some pictures so she knew what to expect?
Oh,
and the answer was, no, I can give you some anecdotal stuff, but there are no pictures.
Really?
So she did exactly what you did, is here are the pictures. Here's me with breasts. Here's raw, ugly surgery stitched up. Here's the healing process. Because other people need more information than just words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think what made me so mad was that I was brought up, I mean, I told you, grew up in a conservative household. I was told that America is the most ass-kicking country on the planet, right? Western medicine knows everything. They can fix everything. And my insurance company failed me. Failed me entirely. And I've come to discover that Western medicine, I mean, this is partly, you know, I thought I mentioned the pathologization of being human, right? Western medicine's not doing really well. It turns out in Thailand, there is a huge medical tourism industry. I was stunned. I'm like, there's an industry just for people who go, I can't get surgery. I can't get my insurance to cover surgery. I will fly to Thailand and do this. So for what it's worth, and by the way, I will, because here's a numerical figure in case anybody cares. If I were to go to, so when my insurance claim was denied, I said, okay, well, how much will it cost? And no matter what, the surgeon would not have been covered. And that was going to be $15,000. That was just his $15,500, I think it was, something like that. $15,000, U.S. dollars. And when I reached back out and said, so will I at least get the hospital stay? They said, well, probably not. You'll also have to pay for the anesthesiologist and the hospital stay. So everything there. And I said, okay, you know, how much could that cost, right? $5,000-$10,000? They said, usually start somewhere around $40,000 a day. Starts. You know, they don't know if I was going to have complications, if I wanted different food, if they, you know. So I was looking at what was likely to be, if going to, staying in Columbus, getting an Airbnb for a month in lovely downtown Columbus was going to be $10,000. And when I added everything up, I was looking at probably $80,000 that, you know, that it would cost of my own money if I decided to go to Columbus. And that's a start, right? That was not.
Now, is that $80,000 of your own dollars with insurance helping out?
Well, that's without insurance helping.
Oh, okay.
That's without insurance helping. So I'm still waiting for the consultation from the place in Denver. They have yet to call me back. I'm waiting for them to call and go, hey, would you like a consultation? So I can go, no, I already did it. Why would I talk to you? We'll see what happens. But so I don't know how much it would have cost to go to Denver. I know I have co-pays. I would have needed, I still would need to stay in the Denver. They want you to be within like 30 minutes of the hospital for 30 days. And so I would have had to get an Airbnb in Denver or whatever, hotel, who knows. All told, I would probably still end up paying, I would guess with copays and housing and everything, still probably $20,000, I guess, of my own money to get this done. Now, I have had friends who had the whole thing covered. I don't know where you get insurance like that anymore, first of all. I mean, I hate to put it like that, but I don't know where you get insurance like that anymore because I haven't been able to get it for more than a decade. Western medicine system. Okay, I'm just going to bring that back up. When I went to Thailand, my wife came with me, my son came with me, and we ended up taking somebody who had been born in Bangkok. So we thought, you know, this will be good, right? He'll be the only man around anyway. Son's 12 years old, right? Turned 13 in Thailand. So the four of us went there. We stayed in a really deluxe hotel. I mean, it was really an amazing hotel. We were on the 32nd floor. I could see the ocean from like a balcony right outside our door. We had two private suites. I mean, it was a phenomenal place. Amazing breakfast bar. I just want to call that out. It was really, truly an amazing breakfast bar. And then I got 9 days in the hospital. Like I said, all of the everything was covered in this one price I think the one price, gosh. And so I also, because we were going to Thailand, my wife says, well, why don't you look into breast augmentation? And I go, do I need it? And she's like, no, but I mean, if you're going to be under, like, may as well do it, right? And I went, I'm not sure about that. And ultimately I got it done and I'm happy I did. I mean, I actually got very small implants put in. The guy says, I want to start here. And I said, ooh, that's too big. And he goes, oh, I'm not sure I can go smaller. Let me see. So I was. So I got two surgeries, 9 days or 9 nights in the hospital. We stayed in a deluxe hotel in Bangkok, the middle of the city, Bangkok. And we spent, all told, and this is, you total everything up, the whole month there, somewhere around $40,000 to fly four people halfway around the world. Get, you know, and I still got more for half as much money as it probably would have cost to go to Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. So when Yanhee International said, would you like to represent us? I'm like, yes, I do. Because it's ridiculous what I faced and what other people face. You know, it's not. I recognize there are people who go, look, we want to make sure that the kids don't get this. I get that. I happen to be a full voting member of the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which publishes a standard of care that's been used for 50 years, literally. Well, okay, sorry. This is the 49th year. So in 2026, it will be the 50th year of the standard of care, which means there was a significant amount of research before that, right? It's not like somebody was like, ooh, I'm just going to write a standard of care. What should we say? What do kids get? I don't know. Should they get lollipops? Yeah, lollipops are fine. We'll put lollipops in there. You know, there was a lot of research that went into this beforehand. So anyway, the WPATH, World Professional Association for Transgender Health, only recommends puberty blockers for children anyway. They don't recommend surgeries. If you get these, it's because parents consented. And I'm going to say, if your parent consents, they probably know you better than I do. Why are we limiting this? I recognize people say, well, it's to save the children. Really? When 82% of the transgender community ends up with suicidal ideation or suicide attempts, who is that saving? It's probably killing people. I have a whole live stream where I yelled at people in Congress, but
I did want to go into hormone blockers, hormone therapy,
puberty blockers. Yeah,
puberty. Thank you, puberty blockers for young people, because in both your country and my country, the legislators are screaming about the damage it's going to do, as though that. Whatever it is surgery and a pill. No.
Right.
It just slows down the development.
Yes. Yes.
So that it buys time, perhaps, for lack of a better term.
Right. Right. So where do I want to go with this? I went into puberty rather late. I was about 14. And again, I suspect, and my clinic suspects it's because of, I mean, I haven't gone to get genetically tested about a partial androgen insensitivity syndrome, but everything seems pretty clear. So I had experienced a pretty late puberty, 14 or so is about when I started, which was embarrassing. I can remember being in a gym locker room and I'm just like, I'm not changing near these people. There's no way. I'm looking at these people going, oh my gosh, what, how come, how am I this messed up? So what puberty blockers do is suppress the production. I'm not going to get the name correct now because I tend not to work with children. Mm-hmm. Let me say it like this. I have never worked with children on any kind of gender issues. I'm worried about it because I don't want people to come after me and call me a groomer. Like, I'm okay if you're an adult. I will talk to you about gender stuff. I would love to. If you're a child, I want to avoid it because it's too much pain that I'd have to go through. So it suppresses the production of a hormone that starts puberty, that gets puberty going. So that's development both of ovaries and testicles. So it prevents you from just starting to go into sexual maturity. Now, even though I had rather late puberty, I really wish I could have bought 4 years. Because if I could have bought 4 years and then transitioned as an adult when I was 18 years old, I might have had a very different life. I mean, I wouldn't have the son that I do now. I might not have the wife that I have now. And that would suck. Of course, I wouldn't know it. So, but I might have had a very different life, you know, from if I were able to transition gender starting at 18. And when I have talked to people who said, yeah, I was able to start at 16, 18 years old, because I have a very good friend who was able to start at 16. I cannot tell you how much envy I feel. I cannot tell you. Yeah, because she looks amazing and she has been very happy. Her life is, I mean, it's not perfect. Gender transition is not a panacea, much like any other medical care, does not cure everything. I can only imagine what my life would have been like. So you were going to say something, though. Go ahead.
Just you're segueing perfectly into one of the questions that I often ask as we begin to wrap. But specifically, before I ask you that question, you said you didn't want to be thought of as a groomer. I use a lot of air quotes in this conversation, apparently.
Thank you. Right.
However, my listeners are the grandmas of the world.
Yes.
My grandson asks me all sorts of interesting questions. And interesting is broad definition, shall we
sure.
say. As a trusted adult that he comes to as a youth, as many grandmas are, if a youth comes to one of our listeners, a grandma, to say, this body isn't matching how I'm feeling, or however this person puts into words, can you give the grandmas of the world some words to respond properly and keep making them feel safe, making the youth feel safe?
Three words.
I love
you. I believe you.
Oh, okay. Close.
And then after that, so six words. I believe you, semicolon, I love you. Yeah. We have this tendency, especially with children. Well, I should say youth, because I don't want to say children. It doesn't sound quite right. But we have this belief that children know nothing, right? I mean, we want to infantilize humanity until like 25. I mean, people are saying, well, our brain's not even developed until 25. And I go, well, then why is it we're able to drive at 16? Why was I able to register to get into the military at 17? Why am I able to vote at 18? Why am I able to buy alcohol at 21? Like, just put me in a plastic bubble until I'm 25. But somehow humanity has survived half a million years by allowing, you know, humans to be humans. There was a book, I mean, I would have believed this anyway, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but there was a book that I read when my wife got pregnant. So just before our son was born, we were like, we should probably like figure out how to raise a kid, right? Like, how do you do this? And we read, oh, I cannot remember her name, Tracy something or another. She called herself the Baby Whisperer. And I believe that was the book that we read. It's called Tracy something, the Baby Whisperer. And her number one lesson is, if you want a child to grow up healthy, treat the child like a human. Well, there's nothing more to it. Just treat the child like you would treat any human. Assume that the child has emotions. Assume that the child has thoughts. Assume that the child wants agency. Assume that the child is going to end up growing up. And that you are responsible for making sure this child is capable of growing up and doing it again. Like having their own kids and keeping the cycle perpetuated. I don't think there's anything more than I would say than just trust your children. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can point to cases, people who have regretted gender transition. There are people who regret it. It's startlingly small. I mean, I use the word startling because it's funny. It's less than like 5%. It is actually the best success rate of all medical treatment for all times. Most people regret like knee replacements. Knee replacements have a horrible regret rate. Open heart surgery, you know, even not open heart surgery, you know, have horrible regret rates. Gender affirming care, startlingly high. And those of us who start it and go, you know, it wasn't for me, oftentimes it comes from social pressures. And I'm bringing any of this up to say, as humans, we know who we are. You know who you are, and I can't tell you who you are. I know who I am, and you can't tell me who I am. So if you have a child who comes to you, especially by, say, 8 years old or so, and says, I'm considering my gender here, just listen. You might learn something. I don't know. It's not like I'm a huge advocate of children. I'm a huge advocate of humanity. We want to assume that there's always something wrong with us, especially kids. I hope we can learn that humans are okay, children are okay, and that ultimately, you know, we don't have to control every aspect of a life in order for the species to perpetuate, because we're not doing really well at this point. So... sorry, that, and when I rule the world.
You're really trying to co-throne me here, aren't you?
I am. I'll be like here. I can run the Department of Efficiency. Is that fine? Can I do that?
So I'm going to be run the world. Queen Agnes, and you're my code whatever, Ilonia. Yes. I mean,
Anastasia. Exactly. <Sorry. laughs> Perfect. Oh, what was the last question, though? Sorry.
Oh, just
was that it?
Oh, good. Well, I want the grandmas of the world to have the right words.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I think if what I experienced was my parents saying, "No, you're wrong," and imagine if your most basic identity. You had people around you all the time saying, no, you're wrong. I mean, this is why there's an 82%, you know, suicidal ideation rate, is because you learn your identity is wrong. You learn you as a person are wrong. And I'm not going to, I mean, I could tell you all the horrible things that have occurred in my life, and I'm sure you don't want to hear it. But I mean, I struggle. I don't like to eat too much food in the house. Because I believe I'm stealing it away from the rest of my family. Because of how I was raised. My parents taught me I was wrong, and I believe that. I believe that in everything. I'm doing better now. But the reason a 52-year-old crabby old man would wish for death was because he was working 80-hour weeks because he wasn't worthy of vacation time. He would accept any responsibility because he wasn't allowed to say no. And he would take on any stupid job because his managers would take advantage of that naivete. I've learned to begin to advocate for myself. I'm not great, but I can only do it because I've learned a sense of self-worth. So my father obviously will never hear a podcast like this. I don't expect my mother. I don't have a great relationship with my mother right now, who's not a boomer. She was born in 1940. So just before. But I think she thought the way she raised me was fine. And it was not. And I don't know how to talk to her about that and say it wasn't. And what I am now is what I should have been raised to be. Not necessarily that she affirmed my gender, but that she believed me and listened to me. And I don't believe parents do a lot of that. Gen X parents didn't do a lot of that. The parents of Gen X didn't do a lot of that. So I think I'll put a period there.
So basically, I believe you. I love you.
Yeah.
Would tell me more, something like that. Would that
yes.
like just...
Okay. Yes. I mean, I've watched my kid. I've watched him. My wife and I have different parenting styles. This will be a quick story, I swear. We have sort of different parenting styles. My wife is much more strict than I am. And I had a horrible relationship with my son before I transitioned. I mean, now that I have transitioned, I have an actual relationship with him, which is great. I mean, you know, the idea that the gender transition is always going to rip a family apart. No. I brought mine closer together. So, but my wife will go, or some will say, hey, I want something or another. And my wife will go, no. And my kid will be like, sorry, you can't see this. But right. His face will be like, what? And then because the parents always, your kids always do this, right? Well, if one mom didn't say it, I'll go to the other mom, right? They'd be in the same room, right? Mom, can I have something? No. Other mom, can I have something? If I go, yes, after you do such and such, he goes, oh, cool, you know, which is exactly what my wife was saying. She would go, no, you can't have it right now. And I say, yes, you can, after you brush your teeth or whatever. Who the hell cares? It's crazy. When you affirm a child, and I'm not dumping on my wife. If you're listening, honey, you're a good parent, okay? Obviously, because look at the kid. If you affirm a child, it makes all the difference to them. All the difference. And they wouldn't have, I don't think, kids can't tell you, but you can see it. And I lived it. So affirm children. There we go. I believe you and I love you.
Well, and I am the first person to admit that I am a far better grandma than I ever was a mom. And I think I was a pretty good mom, but there are some capital B-U-T's in there.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, every kid gets the scars of his parents, right? I mean, yeah. The scars of their parents. I should be gender neutral. What's wrong with me? Every kid gets the scars of their parents. I mean, you know, I don't think we should beat ourselves up about this, but definitely be aware of it. So I think a lot of mental health issues and suicidal ideation could be prevented just by listening as opposed to telling. We always go to telling. And here I am telling you. Listen.
Okay. Speaking of telling people things, you coach.
I do. Yeah. I want to think of it like this, because this question came up. The defense attorney said, what's coaching? It was like a real thing. No. I mean, if you look, is it a regulated industry? No, it's not. Any coaching. I think there are some organizations. So I want to put it more like this, because I mentioned to you I was an executive manager at software companies. So I was accustomed to putting together teams of people, figuring out the needs of the business that would be, that would make the best profit for the company, and then developing a project plan and getting a schedule, whatever, and then getting status on a regular basis to make sure that the plan was met so that we ended up making money for the company and then we kept our jobs. So that's what I'm used to doing. And that's what I call gender coaching. I am really more of a transition project manager. Maybe that's a good way to say it. People will come to me.
Do you want
to
write that down before you move on?
Transition project manager? Yeah, I should. TPM? There you go. You really should be transition product manager, but I don't want to talk about the distinction there. But, you know, people come to me and they go, I would like to transition. And I say, okay, what are your goals? Because for me, the biggest, like when I started, the biggest thing was I needed to grow my hair out. And then later I dyed it. Because, you know, that's not the real color, right?
Oh, isn't it?
It's not my natural color.
Oh.
Yeah. No, it's true. Some people don't know, but. Anyway, point being that that was important to me. I needed to remember how to do makeup and I needed to let my hair grow. Everything else, I'm like, I don't know, I'll find a name. It doesn't make a difference. You know, surgery, I don't want any surgery. That's not necessary. You know, everybody has different goals because everybody looks at social expectations differently. We all look at we all have different things that are important to us. And I think that's one of the big negotiations of safety I was talking about before. Sometimes we care about social expectations and sometimes we don't. So I cared about certain things, and everybody who wants to transition gender or change their gender presentation has other different things that I found important. So, because I mean, there was one person I know who's like, I'm like, what do you want to do first? And she was like, I want to get surgery. And I'm like, wow. I mean, do you want to change your name? You want to think of a name? No, I'm going to get surgery. And I went, let's work on it. So I guess that's what it is. That's why it's different for every person. But it's a different project because it's a different profit that you're trying to get to. I think I just put it like that. But that's what I do. It's not paying a lot of bills. I mean, I also am a content creator. I mentioned write articles and podcasts and videos. But you know, this is very important work to me. I worked for other people for 25 years. It was 25 years in technology. And I taught chemistry at the university level in a few places, three places. But now I feel like what I do, here we go. Here's how I'm going to describe it. There was somebody I was speaking to about just transition in general. I'm going to end up crying on this. It turns out she couldn't afford my services. I continue to talk to her because I just kind of have to, because we were talking through the goals that she had, and she's 25? Like, I'm not even sure. Mid-20s or so. And she said, yeah, I'd love to do this. I'm sorry, you know, I can't afford your services. And I'm like, you know, that's okay. But I will say this, I know you're going to be able to do this. And I'm looking at you now and I think, yep, starting to cry. I said, I think you're going to be a beautiful woman. And the light in her eyes, maybe you can edit this down to a shorter pause, but I would live for that light that I saw in her eyes any day.
I was going to offer to finish your sentence because we've been talking for over 2 hours now.
Yes, right.
And when you get facially animated, the light comes on in your eyes, and I'm looking at this beautiful, motivated face. And actually, no, you're not beautiful. I will take that. You have a pretty face. I mean, you know how some people are beautiful, some people are cute. Your face is pretty.
Thank you.
And it
lights
up.
What's the distinction? I think I need to know.
Well, I
Because
don't
beautiful
know.
was okay, but.
I don't know. Beautiful to me is, I don't know, sort of more on the stage. Cute is almost pixie-ish,
Okay.
whereas pretty is I guess wholesome as well as very attractive.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
So.
Thank you. I'd love to say I worked hard at this, but I kind of didn't. And so.
Well, but you paid the price, put it that way. You
Well,
may
I
not have worked
did,
hard,
yeah.
but you paid the price.
And I guess ultimately I worked hard before
Yeah.
transition since I retired. But anyway,
Okay, so where do
thank
we
you.
find you on the World Wide Web?
The best way to find me is amethysta.io, because I chose IO because amethysta.com was taken. I don't know. They're not using it. And I reached out to them. I'm like, do you want to sell it? They go, yeah, for this price. And I went, no. And they said, all right, well, screw you. And I went, that's fine. I got a better domain anyway. Amethysta.io is cool. The tech people look at it and they go, that's cool. So that's where you can find all of my social media networks are on that. Gender Identity Today is the website where I publish all of my material and accept contributions. So you can go there as well. I am actually in the process of integrating those two sites into. I have a different business entity that I'm. I don't want to use the word transition, but I have a new business entity that's sort of subsuming everything that I've done before. So, with the intent of offering gender coaching, hopefully with not just me, but other people, who are willing to help others out. So those are the two places to look for me. And I'm going to have those two redirect to the new business entity when it's up and running, but that's how you find me.
There we go. I have four or five websites, but my umbrella is the Boom with a Bang, and everything right now is redirecting to Boom with a Bang. So yeah,
Okay.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You get
You're
it.
on social?
So I am leaving Instagram and, well, I'm leaving anything owned by Meta on Sunday, January 19th, strategically timed. But I am on Blue Sky and I am on Mastodon and I'm on YouTube and TikTok for as long as TikTok is around, and it sounds like that's going to be around for a while. And I'm considering going on Counter Social. This is something I just learned about, and but I'm considering it. It's sort of a Facebook where they have facts and stuff checked, believe it or not. So
Oh, details.
I know. So that's where you can find me, yeah. And
Okay.
all of those, sorry, I should have said, yeah, all of those, there are links to all of those on amethysta.io, so you can find it. That's the best place to go, amethysta.io.
Don't
What?
steal my thunder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go
No,
ahead.
I'm just kidding. Okay, so in closing, your website links are in the show notes, and
Cool.
all of your links are on your page at our
Yes.
website.
Oh, thank you. Oh.
Listeners, this has been, I hope, a thought-provoking conversation. I'd appreciate hearing your thoughts. You can leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask Amy. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer.
Ooh.
Share this episode. I mentioned at the beginning I get asked questions by various people, and I try to be as straight talking as I can. Understanding leads to acceptance, and I once had it explained to me that acceptance is fine, but inclusion is what's necessary. So the more people who understand leads to the inclusion of all the variety of people in our societies. Sharing this conversation today, both episodes, will help spread the understanding. If you appreciated this episode, click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform. Or if you're following me at Substack, you'll get an email every time a new episode is released. Following there is free. Amethysta Herrick, thank you for being my guest today and being so open about your own experiences and sharing both professional and personal views about a cultural, air quotes, norm that is having difficulty being an accepted norm. Did I phrase that right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way. Yeah. Thank you so much for your invitation. It really meant a lot to me. It still means a lot to me. So thank you for sharing your platform with me.
Well, thank you for all of your answers. Have a great rest of week.